It's state to state. We got your Nittany line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin. So kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season. Major League Baseball, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoffs especially. All the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. State of State is presented by BetOnline. The game starts here. Are you looking for a higher potential return on your savings? Turn to our sponsor, Save. As an SEC-registered investment advisor, Save safely combines the best parts of saving and investing with its market savings program. Market savings is a savings product that provides you with market returns instead of interest. The returns come from diversified investment portfolios based on your individual investment profile. The return from the investments is paid to you at the end of the selected investment term. But investing comes with risk, right? Well, with Save, your deposit is FDIC insured and never used for any investments. The current variable APYs are 9.07% for the one-year product and 7.9% for the five-year product. So what does this cost you? Well, Save only charges a fee when your investments make you money. To learn more or to sign up, visit www.joinsave.com/state. That's joinsave.com/state. The link to the website is in the description of this podcast. State of State invites you to join Save. Plenty happening with the Penn State football program in the wake of the blue-white game. Wide receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith is officially into the transfer portal, and we have plenty of reaction to what we saw on the field, albeit limited, from the Penn State football team, offense and defense. And it's a part of the blue-white game to wind down spring practices, and now we go into a three-month dry period, so to speak, with football until training camp begins. But the transfer portal is open until April 30th, and there's just all sorts of roster management fun stuff we can get into. Thank you for liking, commenting, subscribing, turning on notifications, and rating us. We really appreciate it. And follow us on social media on X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. Let's start off, Justin, with the biggest news right now going on with this football program. It was something that there were rumors of over the last few weeks, as early as the Monday prior to the blue-white game. Sounded like this was potentially going to happen. Wide receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith has left the program. He is into the transfer portal. From what you have heard from your sources within the team and then just your overall opinion of the move, did you see this coming? Did you think this made sense for Keandre? What'd you feel about it?
I mean, it almost becomes obsolete to an extent, because like, if it makes sense, a lot of these guys are making moves that not necessarily make sense. It's just a matter of where they feel, I say, valued to an extent, right? Like, there's sometimes where you place that onus on, like, why certain things aren't working out the way that they are, whether it's a new offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of different reasons on why guys decide to leave, but that's just kind of where we're at in college sports now, where like, you can't really anticipate roster moves because there isn't any standardized way of, you know, opening up, I would say, the transfer portal, but like free agency, like, okay, this guy's got 3 years, he cannot leave. We can like make sure he's here and have certain things that you have under control, but now the variables are all over the place, and him leaving, I think it's to each his own, right? I think if he can find another situation that fits better for him, it's a great move. If he can't, then we don't know if it's a great move. So time will tell if all these transfer portal moves are the right move or intelligent moves to be made by the players.
He is graduating here within the next few weeks. I think wraps up in May, and then he will have a grad transfer year. You and I were talking about there was a chance he could have gone to the NFL, and given his on-field ability, yes, some inconsistency, but certainly has that athletic ability to play at the next level. So there was some question a few months ago, hey, he might go to the draft. Then he establishes he's coming back through Happy Valley United, and now he's into the portal. to me, Justin, it's like what could have been with Keandre Lambert-Smith. We felt it at the Rose Bowl game against Utah to wind down 2022. We felt it against West Virginia to start off 2023. But just the fact that he would disappear for weeks on end on the field was a real problem. So it's not necessarily the guy that you were looking at as your number one. And you and I talked about it the middle of last season, is that Trey Wallace is really the best wide receiver on the team as of 2023. And now there's a competition, obviously, going into 2024. In your opinion, is this a big time hit to this wide receiver room, or will they keep on moving with the guys they have?
I think it's a perceived big time hit, right? When you think of your top receiver jumping into the portal his senior year. But when we look at just the overall production from the room, I think there's always room to upgrade, right? If the new number one is a different guy and there's significant increase in production, I mean, sometimes you have addition by subtraction, and that can be a case just based on fit. So, I mean, that's the thing a lot of these guys need to realize, especially in skill positions. Like, there's only a few special guys that move the needle by themselves, right? And until then, if there's not any proof in the pudding, or like I like to say, like evidence of impact of that, then I'll play my cards with the field and lay on the coaching and the new offensive coordinator philosophy and see what we can cook up here and move forward with that. I mean, that's the only way you can move. Now, putting my internal hat on, that's how I would be looking at it.
Would you immediately be going to the portal over the next few weeks if you're Penn State to get another wide receiver, or do you sit tight with what you have?
I mean, personally, I'm always of the thought of sitting tight with what I have unless something better comes to me. I don't think there's necessarily a need to fulfill that spot, but they did bring in somebody. I mean, Julian Fleming, see what happens with this offseason progression with him, but they got some receivers coming in from high school, and they're banking their program on the development process. So, like, it hasn't even been in their nature to just jump into the portal just willy-nilly unless something makes sense. But with him losing, with him jumping in, with Keandre jumping into the portal, I don't think it's a knee-jerk reaction to find a receiver unless it's the right fit or someone that's that changes the temperature of the room.
You and I talked about it last week. The portal, the players that entered the portal in the winter were probably the top flight talent. You're going to find some value and some talent in the spring window, but you're then going to have to get somebody on campus who either has 1 year of eligibility left, and it's like, man, you're getting that person in May, or even if they have multiple years of eligibility, you have to sincerely doubt whether or not they're going to actually contribute in a meaningful way on the field in 2024. Right. And Trey Wallace, I'll give him credit, if he can stay healthy, he showed the ability to make people miss, and he looked good during the blue-white game. Granted, he has had plenty of opportunities to flash. It's just a question of, can he stay healthy? Julian Fleming didn't do much in the blue-white game, which you and I talked about it last week. Is like, oh, is this going to be cause for alarm if it doesn't go well? It wasn't bad. It just wasn't anything special necessarily, but you saw Liam Clifford get involved as that short yardage, Johnny on the spot slot receiver who, is he going to burn anybody? No, but he's extremely intelligent, very good route runner. He knows where to find the openings in the defense. Caden Saunders got plenty of opportunities. Omari Evans got himself some opportunities. So if anything, I'm of the mind, you don't necessarily need to go to the portal to get another wide receiver because KLS is gone. Elevate these other guys, give them the opportunity. By the way, Malik McClain continued to bring him up as a big-bodied receiver who got his opportunities during the blue-white game. So if anything, I want to see the existing room get the chance to win that, call it that second or third wide receiver job. That's the way I look at it. And the other thing, Justin, Tyler Warren did not play at all during the blue-white game, but you saw a lot of 11 personnel, so three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back. You saw a lot of Rapelier, Schlaffer, and Dinkins. I'm almost wondering if we're looking at this in the wrong way, Justin, is that it's like, oh, everybody's looking at wide receiver to do something. But is this Tyler Warren as the number one pass catcher in this offense?
I think when you look at the options for an offense when they're attacking, I just think it's 1, 2, 3 in terms of options, right? And I think you can devise your offensive personnel however you want it to be. Some offenses, the tight end's the number one target. Sometimes it's the running back that's the number one target. Sometimes it's the quarterback's the number one target, right? Well, whoever Aaron Rodgers is throwing the ball is the number one guy. So, like, I think when it comes down to who you're putting the ball, whose hands you're putting the the ball into, like whose hands you're putting the ball into, like in critical positions, or how you're attacking a defense is the most critical thing. Because I mean, at the height of Penn State, right, there's always maybe one receiver, but the tight end has been a core piece of the foundation of the offense. So with that thought process, I've always thought TJ Warren was the first or second option, right, outside of the running backs or someone outside, because it's a mismatch internally when you think of linebackers that he's going against, or even from a safety or defensive back standpoint from a size perspective. So those interior players, like those X-factor defensive backs, that's why they're so valuable nowadays, those linebacker, hybrid safety, like guys that can move around so they can cover guys like the tight end from Georgia last year, or our Brock guy, Bowers. Brock Bowers or Brent Strange, or even like a TJ Warren. So like those guys are number one threats and options and offenses. So yes, I think we are putting a little bit too much on the number one guy or option needing to come out of that receiver room, but you do need a threat on the outside to take away everyone piling up on a tight end, because it is easy to bracket those different type of receivers inside if you can man up the receivers on the outside. And that's what we've kind of seen, I think, in the years previous, whether it's just slowing down the run game and different things of that nature, outside of having great personnel and talented guys, but just ways of the schematics of the football game. Having a threat on the outside opens up the offense. So we still need that, but Tyler Warren definitely, it can be a number one or two option through this offense.
Bowers was the comp that I was thinking of, maybe not necessarily in terms of overall potential and ability. Bowers is probably going to be a first round pick. Not to say that Warren couldn't be, but still, mm-hmm. Bowers proved to be very special at Georgia, but he was the focal point of that offense. I wouldn't hate seeing that with Tyler Warren. And then Rapelier obviously has some developing to do, as we saw during the blue-white game, was a little bit out of sync with Drew Auer and the quarterbacks in general, but he did have his opportunities where he looked good. And it's just, if anything, he's going to build into that role. Schlaffer looked like a very competent pass catcher, very athletic tight end. And Dinkins kind of picked up where he left off last season, just that incremental progress. So there's depth in that tight end room. I'm of the mind again, I don't think this Keandre Lambert-Smith loss is that big of a deal, because I think a lot of people are pointing towards the stats, and you always talk about, you know what, stats don't tell the whole story. And it's like, his stats don't blow me away to the point that it's like, man, we're missing all this production. Here's what the remainder of the room is like. No, now the remainder of the room gets a chance to step up and maybe take one of those jobs. So I'm very curious to see that. And then even watching the blue-white game, Justin, you know, I think people need to listen to you a lot more often than they already are, because guess who looked good? Running back Quentin Martin. Guess who looked good? Cornerback Audavian Collins, who you told the world about probably 2 weeks before the rest of the media world started to understand, man, Audavian Collins, the transfer from Mississippi State, has really looked sharp. But what are you hearing so far in the wake of the blue-white game? Obviously, now it's all this roster management stuff, and you've talked about it. You have to recruit your own locker room all over again.
I mean, I think you've seen it with Keandre leaving. It's just kind of waiting and see what's happening. I think everywhere else on the team is pretty competitive moving forward, and they seem to have a good culture and guys bought in to what they're doing there. It's just a matter of, I mean, skimming the fat in this offseason. I don't think it's up to any coaches pushing anybody out or from that standpoint, but it's more of any players that maybe weren't pleased with their playing time or how they were going to be used in the new approaches from the defense and offensive coordinators, and how that kind of changes the offseason management. But besides that, it's been about getting on the road and getting ready for this new recruiting season.
State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out their Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today. All sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today.
It's extremely difficult for the coaching staff, and they're going to have their opportunities here over the next few weeks to see if there's anybody they want in the transfer portal, the number of players that could jump into the transfer portal as well. There have been plenty of people talking about, well, there's only 85 scholarships and they have over 100 people on the team, but now with NIL, that really changes things in regard to scholarships versus an NIL reimbursement package. So even that is a gray area that I'm glad I don't have to deal with those things. Looking at the blue-white game, Justin, very difficult to evaluate the offensive line from Penn State just because one team seemed to be the quote unquote first team offensive line that was available at least to play that day, being the white team. So you had a lot of guys in street clothes, the likes of Drew Shelton, JB Nelson, Sal Wormley. So it's like, okay, you're not really getting to see it, but Nolan Rucci looks the part. Javen Williams getting some opportunity at left tackle certainly looked good. Cooper Cousins at right guard, a true freshman, again, looks the part, is still very green and is getting used to things, but doesn't look like he's mismatched in a Division I, an FBS level, Big Ten offensive line. Because right. Then when you flipped it and you saw what the blue offensive line was, there are a lot of guys that it's like, these guys should not touch the field in 2024. And those were the people Abdul Carter and Amin Vanover were going up against. No disrespect to the way those guys played. Vanover and Carter had a lot of success, got off the ball very, very quickly during the blue-white game. Jameel Lyons also looked extremely good. But it's against inexperienced offensive linemen. It's a spring practice situation. And it's what you and I have talked about. The defense will consistently be ahead of the offense in spring ball. From what you got to see from the defense, who did you like? Who stood out in your mind?
I mean, basically the same guys that we talked about. I thought Tamir had a nice day out, right? We talked about the offensive guys from Quentin Martin from the backfield. But again, it's hard for me in the spring game. It's a practice scenario. But I like the front seven just in general, just how they moved, how they ran around from just an athletic standpoint. And obviously, like I made my claims on the safeties and the corners earlier, but not that anything was just shining bright in the spring game. So we'll see.
If anything, I'll argue with you that AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber, very sharp, and no surprise, mm-hmm. Terry Smith had those guys ready to go. Transfers from AJ Harris from Georgia and Jalen Kimber from Florida. Those guys came in and played well. I believe they were exclusively on the blue team from what I recall. But those two looked really, really good. And again, it's funny how you weeks ago were like, yeah, this secondary, this cornerback room can go six deep. And then that's the opinion coming out of the blue-white game. Man, they can go six deep. So,
I mean, that's kind of where I'm sitting at. Like, nothing from the game was surprising to me. It was like, okay, this is what we thought. Like, and they look how we thought they were going to look. But it's still a glamorized practice.
And it was so hard, Justin, because the wind was nasty.
Right,
so even something as basic as attempting to evaluate the quarterbacks, very, very difficult. And I hope people watched this game and understood the gap between Drew Auer and Bo Prabula. Mm-hmm. And yes, Bo is the better athlete. He is more mobile. However, the arm strength, the arm talent, the passing game ability overall, the ability at this point in his career to read the defense and make sound decisions, it's not even close. And it's nothing against Bo Prabula, but if you think about the way Andy Kotelnicki did things at Kansas, multiple running quarterbacks trying to use the option RPO game in multiple ways, do you almost telegraph that package if you throw Bo Prabula out there versus Drew Auer? Not to say I want to see Drew running too much of the option, but it could make it very, very clear what the offense is attempting to do if Bo was out there for extended periods of time.
I mean, you never know. Like I say, they played Indiana last year, and he came in and threw a strike from a fake run and giving it to the running back. So sometimes you just keep them on the hills and just really never keeping letting the defense, again, dial up and just getting that trigger mode against you. And I think it is different when you get into uncontrollable situations, right? It's, I think, obviously the guys with the big arm and command of the offense and control situations obviously outshine. We just know that the game of football is a heavily variable-based sport. And so when that happens, sometimes athletic ability and just certain athleticism shines bright. And those were kind of the critiques that we saw last year. So, again, until the bullets fly, we'll see what happens. But 100%, I would expect Drew to look better in the spring game or any type of scenario where there isn't like a true pass rush.
And again, new offensive coordinator. There were definitely some pre-snap issues altogether, not entirely on Drew Auer. That's the entirety of the offense. again, it's what we talked about, the spring practice period. The offense is going to be in their installation period. They're still figuring things out from the neck up. Meanwhile, the defense can just pin their ears back and play in that situation. As I mentioned, Abdul Carter is going up against relatively inexperienced offensive linemen. It's a touch down sort of situation that you just tap the quarterback, plays over. So it's, again, you get an idea of what the defense can do, but it's not a true representation of the maximum potential of the offense. I will say this, however, Justin, is that seeing the way the offense played overall, there wasn't necessarily anything that made me overly optimistic or pessimistic. It was about what I expected it to be, but it didn't necessarily make me think, man, this team is going to blow the doors off of everybody in 2024. It just felt like, okay, they're going to be competitive, but you still worry about them trying to make it into postseason play. I know they're trying to winterize Beaver Stadium in the event that Penn State plays in the college football playoff, and I have deep concerns about that.
I mean, I think in the offense, you just got to be patient, right? He's putting in his 3 months of install. Guys are just now getting used to whether the terminology, the pace of it, whether it's the shifts, motions, or however he's going to pull out the different stuff. So I tend to be patient with the offenses going into the season, especially with first-year coordinators. But, yeah, I mean, I think the standard being what it is at Penn State, I think, like we said last year, we will see when the time comes and the season happens on how the offense operates and the defense for that matter, right? Because right now, you know, they look good and everything seems to be clicking. But when the bullets fly, we have to stop the run, create turnovers, and keep points off the board.
Yeah. It at least felt like, from a defensive standpoint, you feel really, really good about the defensive backs. The competition at linebacker is going to be there through the summer. And Abdul Carter, I think, at defensive end makes just entirely too much sense. Deny Dennis Sutton did not play during the blue-white game, has had some bumps and bruises during spring practice. So Amin Vanover and Jameel Lyons, as I mentioned, they got opportunities to flash. And then also on the flip side of the ball, no Nick Singleton, as was expected, no Catron Allen, who's had some injuries during this period and is expected to be back sometime in the summer and ready for the season. So no problem there. But that gave opportunities for a lot of other guys to get in there and show what they can do. Speaking on running back specifically, Cam Wallace got a lot of attention, and Quentin Martin certainly looked good. It's, again, it's a challenge to really, truly evaluate how the running game looks at this point, and especially in a blue-white game, a glorified scrimmage because of the offensive line, both sides, blue and white, trying to get acclimated to what they're doing out there and gelling with each other. But at least from an athletic standpoint, Justin, very encouraging to see what Martin and Wallace can do out of the backfield, because they were catching passes, but there was also that burst in the running game that was just different than what Singleton and Allen can do. What did you think?
I mean, you like to see a burst, right? And one-touch guys are back there. So, I mean, I completely agree, but it really comes down to, like, the play calls and how they incorporate that run attack with Drew and just a new offensive scheme. But I did like how it looked on Saturday.
No, it was very positive altogether. So, I don't know, Justin. It just felt like, overall, the blue-white game, I was like, this is about what I expected it to be. And I wasn't worried walking away from it. I was kind of like, okay. You know, we got to wait and see what we just have to wait and see what happens in 2024. And again, there are things that can happen here with the transfer portal, that there are some potential targets for Penn State at a variety of different positions. But I could also see the transfer portal window opening and closing and Penn State not going to get anybody during this window.
I mean, like you say, that spring portal, I mean, we just got to really do a lot of investigation, even when I'm just dealing or advising with different players going through it. I know a lot of staffs are hesitant to just see, like, okay, why is this guy leaving in the spring? Because you have to have a pretty strong reason to want to leave your school, whether it's perceived that the coach isn't, you're in the doghouse, or it's perceived that you're not valued, or you're just fed up. Like, to leave in the spring, jump on another team, to have a productive fall is a tough feat unless it kind of it's already prepared for you. I mean, right? We talk about tampering and things of that nature, but unless it's there's a fit for you already, and then that's where it just kind of gets the gray area of college football now. So we'll see.
From a coaching staff perspective, James Franklin talked about it after the Blue-White game, is that he's spending the next few weeks meeting with every single player, and then I imagine beyond that, speaking with the families as well, and just, hey, here's where you're at. Here's the evaluation process. Obviously, the rest of the recruiting process is ongoing, so, and then the transfer portal window is open. The schedule just seems like it never stops, and you were talking about it before in terms of contracts. I mean, at what point are we getting collective bargaining to kind of just shore this thing up?
I think it would be, I mean, next couple of years, but I think it would be beneficial to everyone, where you can have expectations and transparency when we're just approaching these very critical junctures of our careers as players, careers as athletes, career as personnel or operational professionals within the business, because like these are all different components that have a chain reaction, right? You lose your best player, it's like, all right, I need to coach, I need to go do some talent acquisition, and now I have to develop. And I mean, that's what comes with the price of the job of coaching. But at the same time, the players aren't benefiting any better, right? If you leave and go to a school and it's like, you now you're under, now you're on third string, or you're not playing in the best position that you need to play on, and you transition up from a school and have a situation like a Cephas where he comes to Penn State, and I don't know what happens to his stock, but he has to recover now, right? So I don't know if that whole move was even the best for him, but it seems like it's empowering to the athletes. It's just, we need to understand that it's a 50-50 swing for the schools, for the players. And unless you have an understanding of timing to be able to evaluate players properly, do talent acquisition, it ends up hurting the product, or just shows that the guys that are ready or have the best players will come out and show. But it's just another mechanism that I don't know adds anything to the situation besides, I mean, flexibility and things to talk about, right? Because I mean, right. Teams can get better and you can upgrade rosters, but it's kind of hard to manage a roster when you don't know when guys are going to jump into the portal, or you just don't know, even as a player, you don't know what's going to happen if you jump into the portal and you go somewhere else. Like, there's a lot of promises made, and just, I mean, just need some level of guardrails on it, because like even free agency in the NFL, we know when it's happening, we know what's going on. If you want to hold out, do whatever you need to do. It's business. It's clear. Right now, it's just like, all right, I'm jumping ship, I'm going here. Oh, I don't have a player. You're going to play. And it's kind of hard to prepare and get ready to move forward.
One last question about Keandre. From what you know of him as a person and then your evaluation of him as a player, what situation do you think he's potentially looking for in the portal where somebody's going to just say, hey, you're the number one guy and welcome to X and Y school? Is it a scheme situation? Because I didn't necessarily think what Andy Kotelnicki was going to put in was going to be a problem for Keandre's skill set. If anything, I thought it was going to enhance it. It would probably be a good thing. There was a good amount of downfield passing during the Blue-White game. I saw way less of those useless screens and useless bubble screens and way more scheming guys open, slant routes, like guys really committing to getting downfield with effective levels concepts. So I was like, man, this really would work for Keandre. He'd be the guy who could take the top off and really explore the space, help guys underneath, but would really compliment him. So if this wasn't going to be the spot for Keandre, what place makes sense?
I mean, you never really know. In terms of, sometimes it's a relationship. Sometimes it can be monetary situations. And sometimes you just don't want to learn someone else's offense on your last hurrah at a school, right? I mean, there could be a lot of different things that go into it with a receiver, so it's hard to speculate anything. But I would hope that he's looking to be featured in an offense where he can put up nice numbers and set himself up for some film to go into the NFL, especially with a guy that has the measurables, right? He's nice, like 6'2", 6'3", 195 pounds. He'll probably run 4.3. And if you put in some good film, you can raise your draft stock and make some money next year. So like there's different ways of looking at it. I mean, this is an individual sport at the end of the day when you look at a player's career and athletic journey. So he might be looking in that scope. So we never know.
Well, I certainly wish him the best of luck. I just wish it hadn't played out this way, I think, for the player and the team altogether. There's just so much more that could have been altogether. So we are obviously going to keep an eye on what Penn State does and does not do during this transfer portal window here in the spring, which, again, winds down on April 30th. So we're going to keep an eye on that. Blue-white game is over. Now we're getting into the doldrums of the summer. A lot of things in terms of roster management are going to go down. We're going to keep an eye on that. Let us know what you guys think in the comments section, and get at us on social media about what Keandre Lambert-Smith has chosen to do entering the transfer portal, where you think he could go. Do you think Penn State needs to go get another wide receiver or any other position for that matter in the transfer portal? This is a complicated time of the year, and we're just going to be counting down the days now until training camp and, of course, opening up things on the road against West Virginia.
Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, let us know what you think of the show on social media and check out all of our content on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Search for the handle at State of State Pod. State of State is presented by BetOnline and by Blue White Outfitters.